Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thanks, Aaron. After spending the weekend putting the finishing touches to our self-evaluation document, I'm tempted to spend my talk too, talking about the new quality partnership. But I'll forego that, and I'll talk instead about marketing the partnership. And I wanted to acknowledge that in putting this talk together, we've done it with Darth Lowen, who we managed to hook out of QAA, and now has one of the longest titles, I think, in higher education. But a key point about Durfel's post is that it's a joint post between the university and our students' union. And I think that says something significant about how universities do need to actually think seriously about the student partnership, and really forms the basis of what I'm going to talk about today. So thank you for inviting me to speak. I know that this conference has been a feature of the HE scene for a few years now, but this year obviously has to be the most significant one given the momentous changes to our sector. I wanted to talk about marketing the partnership because it gives me an opportunity to do two things. First, to explore the relationship between university and student, how that's evolved, and how really we can move on as a sector. And secondly, to talk about some of the ways in which we can take the concept of partnership and turn it into something more tangible that students can recognise and appreciate. So, how has the market affected the partnership? I think that the higher education sector has agonised and expended a great deal of energy over the past 3 or 4 years debating the concept of student as customer versus student as partner. I've enjoyed the debate. It's been fascinating, it's been exhilarating, and it's made us think very carefully about what we're doing for our students and how we meet their expectations. But I worry that we might have lost touch with our students on this. As part of a university-wide shadowing scheme that I'll talk about in a minute, I spent some time last week talking to one of our undergraduate students. His name is Ed, and I was struck by how much thought he put into this. So it was just a fortuitous conversation. So Ed is a very active student, taking part in representation and volunteering activities, and as such sees himself as a very active part in the university community. He doesn't feel it would be right for him to turn up, pay his fees, and offer nothing back. And the way he described it was in comparison to going to the theatre. You can't just buy your ticket, take your seat, then fiddle with your BlackBerry for 2 hours and complain you didn't enjoy the experience. You have to listen, observe, maybe even do a bit of advanced research so that you can get the maximum benefit. Then you have to go out and tell your friends and contacts about what you got out of the experience. So he fully understood and engaged with what we would consider to be the partnership at university, but he was confused about why we felt uncomfortable with him seeing himself as a customer. He was a mature student. He'd taken his time to choose his university and felt absolutely certain that the fees he was paying entitled him to a level of service from the university. He didn't see the contradiction between the concepts of consumption and partnership, and we think he may have been onto something. So if you consider the comparative characteristics of a customer and a partner, there's a great deal of overlap, and we must recognise that. Consumerism, customer, partnership are not mutually exclusive concepts. And if you look at the table, it tells the story, whether you're buying a simple product like a microwave or investing in your own education. You've got a range of providers that you can choose from. There's a whole range of products you can choose from. We can call them courses. You're entirely free to make your choice that suits you and your circumstances. You pay a fee for what you get. And so on. You see the point. But I think that we have a bit of a tendency to blame external forces for imposing this consumerist agenda on us. But I don't think that's entirely fair. So if you look at this table produced by the National Coordinating Centre for Public Engagement, it breaks down the market, the private and the social benefits of higher education. So let's look honestly at this. What we are interested in, we like to think, in the student experience, are the private non-market benefits, the social and the public benefits to others, to all of us as citizens, to society at large, to future generations. But how many of us actually highlight the market benefits when promoting our universities to prospective students? This is the top line. These are the market benefits of higher education: jobs, better starting salaries, higher lifetime earnings, social mobility, and so on. So these are familiar messages. We all use them in our prospectuses. So the vast majority of us focus on the market benefit when selling to students. Now, I've chosen just to highlight this because I'm a bit worried that we may sound a little as if we're judging our students and maybe giving them the impression that we disapprove of their identities as customers when we also choose to market to them as customers. But then we say, when it comes to their degree, no, 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 you're not customers, you're partners. I think it's best for us to focus on how we manage the relationship rather than the words and the isms that we attach to it. No matter how we define the relationship, it should really come down to three things: making an effort to respect and understand our students, their behaviours and their aspirations, empowering them to take charge of their own education, and trusting the students to play a full and active part in university life. So how do we go about it? The key thing for me is that we've got to actually understand and know our students better. It's not good enough to rely on presumption, on our thoughts of what students are about. I think the work that the NUS has done over the past 3 years and is now continuing in partnership with the QAA has been incredibly helpful. Their data tell us things about our students that are valuable and sometimes quite surprising. For example, 78% of students are satisfied with their contact hours, yet as a sector, we obsess relentlessly on it, and this is what we're driven by, actually, by government. Students are much more intelligent and understanding than we sometimes give them credit for. Students are far more interested in talking about how they get the best quality of contact and more guidance on their independent learning time. This is just one example, I think, of where we could be talking at cross-purposes to our students. At Exeter, we've just gone through a major exercise to drastically cut down the number of surveys we send out to students. We were surveying every student, over 70 times each year. That just couldn't go on and wasn't the answer to the challenge. We're starting to think very carefully about different ways in which we gather intelligence about our students. One particular success has been the student shadowing scheme that I mentioned earlier, where 13 senior university managers, including me, have swapped places with a student. It's been fantastically illuminating. This is a project funded by the Leadership Foundation in partnership with the University of Bath. You can see it's very small scale, but actually shadowing students and having students shadowing oneself is a great way to really get to the heart of the organisation and understanding what it is that students want and value. And the issue for us is how to take a scheme like that and actually how to increase the scale, because I think that's really quite an interesting challenge. As Deputy Vice-Chancellor, I attend all the meetings of student subject representatives organised by our Students' Guild, and they're very useful. But we should aim to do more with them. The students are very capable and more than able to engage in serious policy discussions. A further development that we'll be working on in partnership with the Guild is to reshape our quality assurance processes to shift them away from top-down structures to ones that gather intelligence and drive change directly from the initiative and experiences of students. So while I think we have students really at top level on all the committees, education committees, etc., actually involving students in the management and governance of their department or of their faculties and colleges is something that I don't think that we're achieving quite as much as we need to do. So I think it's quite obvious that the key to any good relationship with your students is a partnership with your students' union, in our case, Students' Guild. Having a mature and open relationship with the representative body for students is crucial. I meet regularly with all guild officers, as do my colleagues on the senior management team, both in groups, but critically regularly at one-to-one level. We've cemented this relationship in a number of ways, but most importantly, it comes from the top of both organisations. For example, we've created a budget scrutiny group to consider priorities for investment in enhancing the student experience. So any monies that we get in terms of additional fees, we are discussing with our students, so they're fully aware actually about what our priorities are. But more interestingly, they input their priorities. So in a sense, there is a shared ownership of budgeting as we move forward. The group is jointly chaired by the Registrar and Guild President and has already set some tough institutional goals and priorities for expenditure in the coming years, and they really are tough for us. The Guild provides extensive training and support to all student representatives, society officers and volunteers to make sure that students are properly equipped to make the most of their roles. And almost 5 years ago, we pioneered the Extra Award, a scheme that gives students accredited recognition for their contribution for university life. The scheme has gone from strength to strength and had over 2,500 students enrolled last year. And that obviously what they're doing there as part of their Extra Award will be fit in with the Higher Education Achievement Record. So trusting our students to play a full role in their environment does require a real culture change. It means relinquishing our control and trusting the maturity and intelligence of our students. Our Change Agents initiative has been a great success. Over the past 3 years, we have supported 30 student-led projects that have led to really significant changes in the student experience. So just some brief and early examples. Archaeology. Students were worried about their qualification and how employable they were despite our career service, so they took the initiative and organised their own employability day where former students and major employers attended to give them advice on getting jobs in the industry with an archaeology qualification. More students participate in this event than in any other equivalent university organised events. In biosciences, students wanted more advice and guidance on essay writing, so they took the initiative, researched what was available and talked to their lecturers. They developed a student-authored guide to essay writing. It's been so popular that we're now in the sixth print run and other departments have followed suit. And in the business school, students wanted to encourage their lecturers to use different methods in their lectures, so they piloted the use of voting pads. Now, every student in the business school is given a clicker, and it's changing the way academics engage with students in very interesting ways. And they're working now on, the students themselves, are working on apps to actually do the same thing in a much more effective, I think, way. Student ambassador schemes are quite widespread in the sector, but I think they're often overlooked. They're fantastic examples of students being leaders of the academic community, supporting outreach programmes, open days and university events. So the challenge is how to extend that, how to build scale. And the Athletic Union, a great deal of our students are very active and committed to competitive sport. But until a couple of years ago, we supported very little on-campus sport beyond formal leagues. The student-led athletic union wanted to make much more significant effort to promote inter-campus competition, you know, just in a sense for health benefits as much as everything else. And in 2 years, they've created a highly successful on-campus industry. Almost 3,000 students have signed up, and the campus is filled with sports activity in evenings and weekends. So, in summary, I think we've been having a fantastic, fascinating debate about consumption, partnership, etc. But we can't expect students just to come along with us because of the sheer force of our collective wisdom. We need to shift the tone and purpose of the debate and meet them where they are. So if we don't do this, we're in serious danger of alienating our students and sending out conflicting messages. We must also move on from debating words and concepts and demonstrating our commitment in meaningful and visible ways and put students in the driving seat. I've shared a number of examples of how we're doing this at the University of Exeter. I'm sure there are hundreds of others at your universities. I hope that we can spend the rest of the day and maybe next year's conference talking about these. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.